Welcome to Second Wind Women. We talk with women who are pivoting out of a traditional career or a caretaker role into starting or maintaining their own entrepreneurial venture. I'm Karen Spies. I work with women, helping them maintain momentum in their own businesses. And I love talking with women about how they're changing their own lives for the better. So take a listen. I hope you get inspired. I hope you get fortified and know that you're on the right path if you are an entrepreneur. And welcome. Hi, everyone. I wanted to welcome Kelsey L. Green. She's a strategist, speaker, and community builder on a mission to help people reclaim their focus, creativity, and real-world connections. She's the creator of Summit and Six, which is a high accountability mastermind where women bring bold projects to life. And also she has a program called How to Build Your Circle, which is a course about cultivating a meaningful in-person community. Kelsey explores how our digital habits impact our relationships, attention, and sense of fulfillment, and about how setting simple boundaries can open up space for what really matters. So welcome, Kelsey.
Thank you.
I am glad to have you here.
Yay. I'm so excited to have this conversation today. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Happy to do it. So can you tell us a little bit about Summit in Six?
Absolutely. Yeah. Summit in Six is a mastermind. It's a high accountability mastermind for women, entrepreneurs, and creatives. And it is really designed to be a container for women to achieve one big goal. So your summit, whatever that is. A lot of women are finishing their books in Summit in Six. They are launching their business, a podcast, or they're artists who are finishing a body of work for a gallery exhibit, things like that. We do it together. And one of the pillars, I know we'll be talking a lot about this today, is setting digital boundaries such that you can bring your projects, your creative projects to life.
That sounds fantastic. My first question is, though, is it sounds like you work with like a really diverse group of people. What is kind of the thread that runs through that kind of unifies all those, the group of people that you're working with?
Yeah. What a great question. Thanks. So I work primarily with women. Not to say I don't work with men, but I work in the spaces of women entrepreneurs and creatives quite a bit. And the through line to my work is really community. Right. So I really bring this to life in different ways. I believe very strongly that setting digital boundaries in your life is going to create a richer and more meaningful community, both digital and in person. And I believe that doing things together, like achieving something, is just more fun, you know, in community. So really, there's these two themes, I'd say digital minimalism and community, but underlying it all is how people come together and really creating those spaces.
Right. Great. So you said something earlier about when we talked about helping people take baby steps.
Yeah.
And what do you mean by that?
Well, now might be a good time to just kind of launch into the digital minimalism chat, because the baby steps are in relation to that body of work. So basically, we are seeing people struggling with their mental health. Right. And with sort of a kind of stalling out on their dreams and, you know, really existing in the world in a way that is fulfilling and meaningful. And this has always been an issue sometimes. Right. But I'd say that in the last 10 years or so, 15 years, we've really seen people's mental health decline. And this is
teenage girls. I don't know if you know about the epidemic of teenage girls committing suicide because of the intensity of the social media pressures that they feel, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I know lots of parents out there have read the book, The Anxious Generation. Highly recommend. It's going to scare the shit out of you probably. It's an important read. So if you have a child, yeah. So, you know, this is not just speculation. We are seeing this come out in data and lots of studies around the rise of especially the smartphone, but certainly, you know, the various platforms that exist in the digital space and the decline of our mental health and our relationships.
And even capabilities, right? Haven't they done testing on like how well your brain works if you're a heavy technology user versus not.
Absolutely. Yep. And honestly, it's not hard to find any of this stuff. You can just, you know, just Google it. You'll find
Google it.
Yeah. Right. And I know we'll talk about, you know, in this discussion too, tools, right? And using the tools as tools. Google's a great tool. Like no arguing with that. Right. But, you know, looking at, yeah, I mean, kids, that's a whole different topic. We can have a podcast just on that, certainly.
Yeah.
But for us, there, you know, for example, there's a study called The Brain Drain, and it's about if your phone is next to you, even face down, your attention is more fractured. You just are not able to cognitively show up. Yeah, right. As you might be able to if your phone is out of sight. That's literally proven, right? So you can imagine if you are in the space with someone in person and you both have your phones face up, you know, it's the level of presence is going to be diminished. That's just the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even these, right? When you have the watch, I've been in so many meetings and people are texting me and what I'm doing is going, oh, is it urgent? But what people are seeing is I got to get out of here.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I have a, you know, I really love seeing the data on health. Health and wellness is one of my, you know, values, right? So I have a whip strap, which if you are just listening, you can't see it, but there's no face on it. It's actually pretty annoying because people think it's a watch. And so they'll ask me the time and it's just a band. Okay? And, you know, and I use the app and I look at the data, but it's not, I'm not tempted to scroll through on my wrist, you know? And
yeah.
There's so many cool smartwatches. I mean, they're very cool, but I don't have one because I know that I will mess around with it all day, right?
And what did you say it was called again?
It's called a whoop strap.
Whoop.
So similar to the Aura Ring. You know, it's just a tracker. And it looks dorky. It just looks like, I don't know, it looks like a medical device to me. But I'm like, I don't care. You know, that's more important. You know, or looking cool is less important than the benefit
right.
idea, which is the tracking without the screen.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fantastic. So how did you coin this term digital minimalism? Was that you or did you pull that from somewhere?
Yeah. Good question. Definitely not me. Cannot take credit. But Cal Newport, probably I'm not sure if he coined it, but he wrote a whole book on it. So I would recommend that book. He also wrote many other books, Deep Work and Slow Productivity. If you are someone that wants to increase your ability to focus and bring your work out into the world, you know, these are great books. And I can go back to the baby steps question and talk about some of these ways, right?
Absolutely. So
I just wanted to frame up the issue first that this is not something that is a maybe or speculation. This is proven that we are having a more difficult time because of these devices, right?
But at the same time, you're not anti-technology, right?
Absolutely not. Yeah. No. So my whole premise of what I try to talk to people about is use these amazing tools that very smart people have created for us, you know, with so many benefits. Use these tools as tools, right? And set some boundaries around it, right? So the metaphor that I've been having a lot of fun with lately is the metaphor of a hammer. Now, a hammer can be used to build a beautiful home where you can have refuge and sanctuary and these amazing experiences and create hearth and beauty. And you could use a hammer to harm someone, right? So let's say we're looking at the hammer as a tool to build a beautiful house. I'm not arguing we need to find a rock instead of the hammer. The hammer is a great tool, right? I would never say throw the hammer into the river and like, it's only going to count. It's just, you know, if you use your hands to try and build that house, like, no, use the tool. But the problem is people have started to use this tool everywhere in their lives, right? So they're using a hammer for other stuff.
On their glasses.
Yeah. Then they're like, the hammer's starting to kind of take over their lives a little bit, right?
Oh.
So funny if you were like, I take the hammer to bed now. Like, I just stare at the hammer.
Went out to dinner, took the hammer with me.
The hammer, talking to the hammer instead of my friend.
Right.
Exactly. So can we, kind of like recognize what's happened. Yikes, I do have the hammer in bed with me. I am talking to the hammer instead of my kids. Can we recognize that and then set some boundaries around our use, you know, to have the way that we're interacting with technology support our values rather than subvert them.
Right, right. And how do you suggest that people set up those boundaries and stick by them? Because I think that's the important part, right?
Yeah. I'd say that there are two main approaches that I see, and this is actually with a lot of habit creation in general. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on this too. So the two ways are baby stepping in, and the other way would be, I'd say, doing a big digital detox, creating your ethos around your use and starting from that place, right? For most people, especially if you, you know, are someone that does have to sort of be interacting in the digital spaces a lot, like you're an online entrepreneur, or, you know, maybe you have some close family, but they aren't within your locale. Okay, whatever. For whatever reason, I would say the baby step approach is probably a good one for you. But I will say that if you don't start with defining your values, you know, the things that you really want to bring into the world and live by, you know, that you're going to have a tougher time because you're going to, you know, you are basically fighting these, you know, this huge industry full of super duper smart people that have worked very hard to make these devices mega addictive for our brain. Right.
Right.
Yeah. So you're, you know, it's going to take some work on your part, and there's some pros and cons, right? Not going to lie. There's going to feel, especially at first, feel like some severe downsides, but the benefits, I think, far outweigh, you know, the inconvenience is primarily the issue of being off your phone more.
I mean, I love it how you say, Kelsey, start with your values, because that's what's gonna you're gonna hook onto to keep you, you know, keep you disciplined and say, okay, I know these boundaries are good for me because of these values that I set. And I know that there's like the step down way and the cold turkey way. And I have never in my life been able to manage the step down way. I
think
Oh no. If I give myself like a quarter inch, boom, I'm in there. I have to do like, nope, poison. And which makes it really hard because I do struggle with social media, right? Because that's a big part of how I keep in contact with a lot of people. And every time I take something off my phone and I'm like, that's it, I'm done. Then somebody's like, this is the only way you can reach me. You know, not my like super close friends and family, but other people in my circle. And it's just like, I keep getting sucked back into it again and again. And so for me, baby steps don't maintain boundaries well enough.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I would probably agree with you as well. And I can talk about what I've done in my own life.
Yeah. I'd love to hear that.
Yeah. And I would say I probably have more so aligned with your approach as well. Right. Because, yeah, it's like, well, what's another few minutes, you know, if you're,
right,
if you're kind of setting those little bitty boundaries. So what I have done and what I have found that helps, and I will note that this is definitely a journey, right? Is I, you know, I don't have kids, so I'm not needing to go, you know, pick someone up if they're sick or anything like that. Right. But
That's another big deal. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. I'd say people, I hope this doesn't offend anyone, but I think people use their kids as an excuse a lot, you know, to not have any control over their digital use. But anywho, my mom is set on a call through. So if she calls or my stepdad calls, which he would probably call in relation to her health, then that breaks through the call, the notice.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. So there's that. There's these ways you can adjust for different people in your lives. But anyway, so what I do is 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. no screens, right? So the phone goes into do not.
I'd love you. That's amazing.
The phone goes into do not disturb at 7, and it goes into my closet where, you know, it's, I can hear it. It's close.
Right.
And that serves to have it out of my sight.
Right.
I try to charge it throughout the day because I don't want to have to deal with charging it at night, because then I'm like, oh, I'll just charge it near my bed. You know, that whole trap, right? Yeah.
Right down the slope.
Yeah. So, and then do not get on it till 7 a.m. Now, I will say that sometimes I get up around 5 a.m. So from 5 to 7 a.m. is a good time for me to write and do a deep work project. So I can get on my computer if I'm going to do one of those deep projects. Right. If I'm going to just do little admin-y things and check email, that's not going to work. That's like an after 7 a.m. time. But if I'm ready to sit down and write, you know, that's allowed. That's fine. Yeah. The other thing I've done is no notifications. So I don't have any. Once in a while, I'll set up those little badges, like the circles, you know, on the icon for the app, the little red circle, like one.
Right. Right.
You know? Yeah. That's so maybe I'll do that. But there's nothing popping up on my screen. And there's absolutely no sound for email, for calls, for texts. Now, I'll note that there's a downside of this, which is that I have clients that call sometimes, right? I'll say too, you know, if there's a crisis, an emergency situation, like there were some wildfires last year, and I help clients with communications around that, say like, yes, I will, you know, I'll have my phone on, or if I'm running an event, you know, of course, that's right. Fine. But day to day, 98% of the time, you know, no sound notifications on. And one of the practices I'm really trying to implement is batch texting, right? So where at, I want to say 2 points in the day, I'll sit down and look at the texts that have come in, respond to the texts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And right. Then of course I can respond to any calls. I mean, truly most of the time it's not an emergency.
Right.
And you and I both existed before the smartphone when we all just got along fine without having to know every single thing at all minutes of the day.
Oh my gosh. I found letters the other day in my parents' basement. Because when I was in college, calling long distance was expensive. And my friends went to college like in Louisiana and I was in Chicago. We wrote each other letters and they were like diaries. And I was looking at it. And I was like, oh my gosh, not only is it sweet, but like, what a pace. What a pace, right?
Yeah.
That's really cool. And I totally agree with you about notifications. I remember very pointedly, I was like chilling at the pool with somebody. And just like we were listening to the wind, like it was like completely chill. And then my phone went like, and my heart started pounding. And I was like, and I thought to myself, does this happen every time? And I just noticed it because I was in such a calm space. And I have no doubt that it happens every time, you know, and how is that on your cortisol levels and your stress levels? Because somebody was like, hey, thinking of you.
Sending you a meme. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right. And you really do, to your excellent point, you really do lose touch with what it's doing to your body because we are so inundated all of the time that we just don't notice unless we have taken ourselves out, you know. And I'll just tell a quick story about one of my best girlfriends.
I love stories.
Yeah. We went for a backpack, just the two of us, kind of scary, if I'm being honest, you know, there was like no one out there, but it was beautiful. We were having this amazing time and we were out there for 3 days. And on the second day we hiked up to this peak and, you know, at that, you know, you can sometimes get cell service at the top of mountains and things. And so she goes to turn on her phone. She wasn't worried about her kid. She just wanted to check what was going on and got service, gets on her phone, checks your email and text. And then she got this like, you know, she was dating someone, but then it was like complicated. So she gets this text, you know, that's like some kind of bummer text.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically ruined the rest of her time, you know? And it was like, she had just not checked the phone till we got back to service. She would have had a blissful, incredible rest of the experience in the woods, you know? So it's just, we need to interact with our lives. And these days that often means being in these digital spaces, but I want to make a really critical point. And that is sometimes it seems like we are connecting more with people better because we have these very light touch points, like these texts, like these little texts that you mentioned, thinking of you, sending you a funny thing, little dog video, whatever. One of the main issues, though, is that I believe that keeps us from then seeking those deeper interactions with either the same people or other people, right? And it almost keeps us in this light touch space. And we aren't ever striving to have those deeper conversations, look at each other, you know, face to face in the eyes, share a meal without.
That's a cool point. That's such a cool point. Like if you feel like you're having this like constant conversation with like, you know, pause of a day or two in between, then you don't feel the need to go out and have coffee with your friends or go on a hike or do something where you can really have like a, like you're saying, a deeper, more involved conversation, right?
Yeah. And an embodied experience and conversation, which is like physical bodies in the same space. You know, we evolved, you know, reading these very, very nuanced cues, you know, with body language and facial expression and the feeling of connection from being in the physical space together. And now we've, you know, just taken that away.
Are you at your wit's end and you know you need to make a change, but you just can't seem to find the path forward? I've opened up a couple of Second Wind Clarity sessions. They're fast, one-on-one, and yes, we will do a few somatic exercises to help you get out of your brain. Book it now at secondwindwomen.com/clarity session. Let's get you revved up to pivot towards your more fulfilled life.
Right. And right. We're wondering, why do we feel so lonely?
Okay. Why do I feel so isolated? Yeah, no, that's, you know, but on like, on the other hand, like, it's such a delicate balance, like you're talking about with a tool, right? Because like my friend's daughter, who's 22, went on a solo hike on the Pacific Crest Trail, right?
Amazing.
No phone service. Of course, when she got to the points where she's supposed to have phone service, her mom's like, she's supposed to be there today. I want her to like, I want it. So, you know, and with kids at school, like when I went off to school, my parents were like, goodbye. Goodbye, you know? So it's such a different world. And I totally love what you're saying about really establishing boundaries and being really mindful of what that tool is doing to you. And when you talked about the hammer, the first thing I thought of was like, you can use it to hit a nail or you can turn it around and pull out drywall, right? Smack it through the drywall and yank it out. And it's such a cool point, Kelsey. So let's talk a little bit about AI and that as a tool, because yeah. I think that's really sucking a lot more people into the, and by suck, I mean suck, sucking a lot of people more into the digital space because of, you know, the versatility of that tool.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I'll be honest, there's some pretty serious, I'd say, ethical, moral concerns around AI and where humanity is heading because of it. We obviously know it's an unprecedented time. So we shall see, right, what happens. At this point, I would say, similar to the other tools, you know, I think that it can be a great tool and to use it sparingly when you need it. I think, you know, I'm sure you've seen these studies about how AI is like making us dumber, right? Because we no longer have to think yeah. critically. Yeah. And oh my God, I wrote my master's thesis on vulnerability between human and non-human species.
Tell me more about that. That sounds really cool.
Sure, sure. I studied bees and beekeepers, essentially, and how they are vulnerable to each other. And I am so grateful that AI did not exist when I wrote this, because it's one of the things I'm most proud of in my life. And there was, you know, this was over 10 years ago. There was no temptation. There just didn't exist to use AI. So it was the old school, well, some of it was old school library books, physical books. And some of it, of course, was, you know, digital academic papers, of course. But I'm so delighted that that work is my work from my own brain. And I, you know, I think one of the issues in general with all of this tech is that it's, you know, we don't have to think for ourselves as much, critically think, and we also don't have as much space to do so. And of course, much less incentive because we don't have to, right? And I think that there's something really scary about that, right? And really sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, I have used AI a lot and I do find that there's always an offer at the end of every prompt. Do you want me to put this into a PDF? Do you want me to butter it out? How about if we, you know, and I find that just the overflow of information really dilutes the impact of any of it. And I would say that is my main issue. I mean, that's one of my main issues with it, actually. Another issue is I have a friend who uses AI for relationship coaching, and she has named it Bradley. Talking, I apologize. If you're listening, I apologize talking about you. She asks it. She's like, should I ask the guy I'm dating if we're exclusive, or is it too early yet? Like, she asks him this very, very, and the things that people ask AI, there is no, like, it is literally sucking up data and using it. And there's no expectation of privacy with your interactions with AI. And I think it's just so far out of people's scope to think about it like three steps removed.
Yeah.
I mean, very much like, you know, when you Google something, of course, you're going to see an ad for it in the next 30 seconds.
Right.
So for me, like, those are the two things, like the mental space, like you're talking about, really, and just the total obliviousness that most people have about the lack of privacy when they're talking about their own personal, like, very, very serious personal things to, you know, a server somewhere in the world.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm not saying I've never used it for, you know, interesting psychological takes, you know, that you're like, oh, what are the, yeah, just like, like framing up an issue for you. And it's, I mean, it's wild. It's incredible, right? It's an incredible invention.
It is incredible.
You can't deny that. But, you know, of course, it's funny when people are started saying to me, well, ChatGPT told me, da, da, da. Like, well, ChatGPT is like so sycophantic, right? So it's going to always be telling you, you know, kind of like what you want to hear a little bit, right? And pumping you up.
Right. I did at one point, there's a prompt. I forget the name of it. I think it's maybe like Lydia. There's a prompt that you can put in that's like, I want you to speak constructively for me. I want you to challenge me on things. And I've done that. So maybe mine is a little bit less sycophantic, but at the same time, I've also asked it not to use M dashes.
Same.
To no avail, right?
Yeah. Or yes, I've also done the prompt where it's like, give me the tough love, you know, and it's so interesting to see what it says. What's so funny is that it will mess up things like dates 2 months from now. You're like, this is a calendar. Like this.
Right.
God, if it can mess up a date 2 months from now, like get the day of the week wrong, you know, with the number date, like what else is, you know, it's very scary. So I'd say letting people figure out their own stance on that. There's, of course, a lot of really interesting discussion happening around the ethics of AI legislation, some really scary things that have happened with it. So I think, like, for example, if you follow the Center for Humane Technology, they talk a lot about this kind of stuff. And that's a great place to start if you're concerned.
And how do you suggest people set boundaries for themselves about AI use, right? Because you can use different AIs for different purposes, but again, you're just spreading your brain all over the internet to where you're not even aware of what's happening with your left foot. So how would you suggest people kind of curate their own use?
Yeah. Well, I would say starting out with doing some more research about, as you mentioned, the privacy issues and making sure you're comfortable with that, right? Before you give it all of your deepest, darkest secrets. And also if you know, your client's information, right? Even,
yeah,
you know, scary if you're a service provider. But, you know, to be honest, I guess my point is more so around really limiting all of these tools in your life, right? So AI is really going to be, for me, it's a really small component. Like when it first came out, you know, how everyone, all these marketers were using it for their copy. And sure, there's so many Claude and, you know, there's so many that now are better than ChatGPT and whatever. But I have never found one that does not sound like bland, regurgitated AI googly gook, right? I just hate it. So I'm trying to never use it for my copy. And, you know, it's almost like now if there's a typo, people are like, oh, wow, this is like, she actually wrote this.
I read a LinkedIn post about that. I'm like, are we going to make typos on purpose now?
No, exactly. Right. And so now I'm like, well, great. We don't have to worry about typos anymore. Fabulous. Right. The just like the more I can use my own voice in my copywriting, the better. Right. Even if it's a little bit wacky, I'm using too many capital letters or exclamation points. I'm like, whatever. Like, at least people know it's not AI. Right. I have so many entrepreneur friends who are, I mean, one woman is, her entire business is AI. And so, you know, of course, they're using all these cool, fancy tools and they would argue with a lot of this, but whatever. That's not really my point. My point is more so that the presence of these tools in general in your life is something to seriously question. And I would say AI is no different, right? And looking at, does this support your values of privacy is something that's important to you. You know, if thinking critically is something that's important to you, if in-person relationships is important, if your own mental health is important, then looking at how you utilize these tools in your life is going to be critical.
Speaking of in-person, have we talked about your How to Build Your Circle program? I don't think we have.
So, but I'd love to. Thanks.
Let's hear about that.
Sure. So I a few years ago, I was noticing this loneliness issue and people talking about how hard it was to especially make friends after a certain age, right?
Yeah.
And when I first created the course, How to Build Your Circle, I tiptoed around the digital boundaries issue because I didn't want to freak people out. I didn't want people to think I was like, here, take their phones. And now I don't give a shit. I have an entire module around digital boundaries if you are someone who wants more in-person relationships in your life, right? So basically the course, yeah, goes through six modules, 6 weeks, and it goes from, you know, ways to interact with the world, similar to kind of how we used to, right? And then ways to build up kind of your skill set around talking to people. Of course, COVID, you know, did a bit of a disservice to all of us and that we all got a bit more awkward, right? Chatting in person and attending events, I'd say. But, you know, kind of how to come back from if you've been isolated, even if you're introverted, but you want to get out there, how to take some of those small steps. And then really, one of the main issues people run into is how do you take a new little fledgling, you know, acquaintanceship, like someone you've seen at pickleball, you know, 90 times, take it from that to a friendship, right?
Right.
Yeah. So
right.
It's kind of going through those steps and creating a little action plan for yourself. And it you know, it takes being vulnerable.
Right.
It takes risking rejection. All right. So I've got a little lesson on rejection. Yeah.
I think entrepreneurs have a little bit of a benefit there because we're almost always risking rejection.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't make it less painful, I don't think. But
yeah,
just have built up that muscle a little bit.
Right. I know.
Yeah.
And we're always, yeah, I mean, I think we connect with each other a lot just to, you know, keep our network strong. So yeah, you're probably right.
So this is a group of people who are all building their own circles, right? The circle is not the group.
You know, it's funny that you ask that question because my goal was to get people outside. I mean, literally off their couches, out of their houses, into their local communities, regional communities. And people gave me the feedback that they wanted a digital community with the course. So for the 2026 launch in February, we will have that short-term community that we can come together and talk through some of this stuff. And I'm excited for that because I love some of my digital communities as well. So I'm not saying that's not valuable, but it's just funny because I didn't want people to spend one more minute on their screens. I wanted
right.
them to go out, but people, you know, would like to do things together and talk through some of their experiences and have access to me live. And so that's all. That's great.
There's so many amazing people. I mean, you and I we're, you know, how many hundreds of miles away from each other? Like, again, the tool versus, I wouldn't say addiction, but I mean, maybe I should, but tool versus weapon. Maybe that's what we want.
Absolutely.
Little intense, but point made.
Now, I think, you know, I truly feel like it does sound kind of intense. And I used to be worried about that, about sounding too intense about it. But I keep hearing people talk about how stuck they feel and how they have spent yet another weekend, you know, on their couches, you know, just streaming Netflix and scrolling Instagram, right? And now I'm like, I don't even care anymore. If, you know, I think the message needs to be strong. I think we need to say, like, this is a weapon. This is harming us, you know? And in Digital Minimalism, this book, he talks about that we think that for rest, we need to just zonk out, you know, just zombie out a little bit. And we want just that time. But it turns out when we do high quality activities, like crafting something with our own two hands, making a beautiful meal, service work, volunteering, it seems like it's going to be physically more demanding. And yeah, probably it is. But that will be more fulfilling and that will feel, you know, just that will feel better to have done that than to have done Netflix binge.
Yeah, nobody gets off their couch and says, wow, that was amazing watching Netflix for 3 hours. Incredible.
When you first start, you're like, yay, I'm all cozy.
I can do what I want.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'll make one more point around, you know, ways to implement this in your life. And that is a note on solitude. So solitude is something that I teach in the course. Lots of other people talk about this. And when I say solitude, I do not mean, as we've just been talking about, Instagram scroll fest, Netflix binge, right? Because the idea of solitude is that, and you can actually even be in the same space with someone. So, you know, if you're married and live with someone, whatever, but it's actually no one else's ideas are coming into your brain, right? So that means not being on the platforms, not watching the shows, sometimes not even reading a book or even listening to music, right?
Yeah.
Actually sitting with your own thoughts, your own brain, right? Yeah. So one of my favorite ways, because literally just sitting there looking at a wall, that feels a little intense, right? And people are not used to boredom anymore. So that will drive you crazy.
Right.
But doing a long, slow, boring walk, you know, without
gardening.
Gardening. It's a great one. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Without a podcast. I mean, you know, I love podcasts, you know?
Right.
I can listen to podcasts all but damn day.
Yeah.
It's just
right in your brain. Yeah. No, I have a long history of meditation, and I've talked with so many people who say, I'm terrible at meditating. And I'm like, that's not even possible. Just because there are things spinning around in your brain, the point is to just let them drive by like a car. Don't try to grab onto them, and don't be like, I'm going to fight that car, right? It's a very similar kind of thing where you just learn to be still, right? And talking about how technology, you know, crowds your brain, and how all these ideas and books and podcasts and everything, just it's just like proliferation of information, right? I love your point about solitude, because that's what meditation is. It's like self solitude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel like people are having a harder time with meditation than they used to? I mean, I feel like it's always been kind of hard, but do you think it's getting worse?
I think people have been resistant as long as I've known about it. The only people I've seen who aren't resistant to meditation is people who are high all the time. Seriously. But everybody else is like, I just don't know I want to do it right, or I don't feel like I have enough time. That has always been a thing. That's always been a thing.
Well, I love the time argument, because yeah, I can't remember if I mentioned it yet, but I run these screen-free Sunday challenges.
Oh yeah, do tell about that.
Yeah, free little challenge. Turns out 24 hours is pretty tough for a lot of people, right? But it's supposed to be. It's a challenge. And if you aren't sure, if you have a problem with your phones or screen, sign up for the challenge and you will see, right? You will see immediately, because it's hard for me. And I obviously spend a lot of time, you know, being intentional about my digital use. So if you're not sure, sign up. But, you know, it's people just really have become unaccustomed to any moments without inputs, you know, and I just want people to experience what it's like when you get past that hump, right? Kind of like in meditation, I find, at least in my own practice, where, you know, that first little bit is terrible. That's terrible. And then you start to reap the benefits after a little while. So the main feedback I find in the screen-free challenges is, at first it was terrible. I was anxious. I was super bored, hated it. Then people say, oh my God, I have so much time in a given day, or even in a given evening after I get home from work. Who knew I had this much time? So much time, right? To do stuff. And the amount of things you can get done when there's no noise, and it's either sit there and be bored or do a project in your house. It's pretty interesting.
The amount of real things you can get done. I saw this one, I don't remember where I saw it, and somewhere was like, a person was talking, they're like, I do a lot of volunteer work. And like, yeah, what kind of volunteer work do you do? And like, well, you know, I help Instagram for a good 3 or 4 hours every day. I'm on there creating content for them. But the point is, you're giving your time, right, to these platforms when you could be doing something real that would actually benefit another human being, right? Or yourself, or your animals or anything?
It's so hard, right? Because I do acknowledge the challenge, because I was volunteering with the victim advocacy group for a while, and they really needed communication support. But I was like, oh, this is my job. Like, at the time I was taking on, I had, you know, a lot of more strategic communications clients, state and federal agencies. And so I just like, oh, organizational comms, I was pretty burnt out in it. But you know, the Instagram and social media was one of the main places they talked about their services, and they were great services.
Yeah.
So it is hard, right?
Yeah. The balance, right? Well, I love this conversation, Kelsey. I would love to talk with you in like 6 months or something. We could catch up and see what's going on with you. But I know that you provide a ton of value here for people to think about their use of digital media. I so appreciate that.
Thank you so much. It's been fun, and I've had a great time with you in all of our chats, and love the work that you're doing in the world too. Love the audience that you serve. Just like so excited that we are having these kinds of conversations and bringing up these questions, and also like the vulnerability to talk about it within our own lives. Like, I wonder if I'm on the platforms too much, and
yeah,
being able to talk about it and like do it together. So I really appreciate the opportunity.
Fantastic. Awesome. Thank you. Are you at your wit's end and you know you need to make a change, but you just can't seem to find the path forward? I've opened up a couple of Second Wind Clarity sessions. They're fast, one-on-one, and yes, we will do a few somatic exercises to help you get out of your brain. Book it now at secondwindwomen.com/clarity session. Let's get you revved up to pivot towards your more fulfilled life.